welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended or to be construed as legal advice. We hope that you enjoy the program.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons Podcast. My name is John Drake, and I am in the Indianapolis office. Today, I'm joined by Amy Jensen from Atlanta. We're here to talk to you about restrictive covenants during the time of the coronavirus. We are facing a pandemic from the COVID-19 virus that's affecting all legal issues. Restrictive covenants are no different. One of the primary issues facing employers who are trying to enforce restrictive covenants during the coronavirus period are the logistical challenges with the courts themselves. Many courts are simply closed or operating with a reduced staff. For example, New York State courts, as of a few days ago in May 2020, were not even allowing new cases to be filed for non-essential cases or non-emergencies. That exception does not include restrictive covenants or trade secrets. Many courts are limiting hearings to just telephone or remote video hearings and not allowing any members of the public, attorneys, or parties into the courthouse. The challenge then becomes, what should employers do when dealing with restrictive covenants and hearings? In some cases, courts are deciding issues just on the papers. For example, a recent federal court in Kansas on March 30th decided a motion for a preliminary injunction on restrictive covenant issues just based on the submission of the parties on paper and without conducting an evidentiary hearing. Other courts are having hearings by telephone or in some cases through Zoom or other video applications. Employers should keep in mind these logistical challenges, including the availability or difficulty with travel for witnesses if they do have to go to another city for a hearing, and how to deal with exhibits when conducting a hearing by phone or by video. There are also challenges in restrictive covenant cases when seeking a preliminary injunction and arguing about irreparable harm. In normal circumstances in a restrictive covenant case, in many cases, the plaintiff will seek a preliminary injunction arguing that the defendant must be enjoined from their activities in violation of the non-compete provision or non-solicitation provision because of the irreparable harm to the company. In the current circumstances, many companies are closed or have very limited operations, so it may face an uphill argument about what legitimate business interests it is trying to protect if it is not operating or only operating in a limited capacity. Of course, the comeback argument from the employer is that confidential information, goodwill, and customer relationships, all of which are protected by restrictive covenants, are always important to them, and harm to those interests is always irreparable. Overall, the takeaway is that employers should think carefully about whether and how to seek preliminary injunctive relief for restrictive covenant cases in light of the current logistical difficulties facing parties and the courts during the COVID outbreak. Another issue that comes up in restrictive covenant cases is how courts addressed furloughed and laid off employees in light of the economic conditions that we're currently facing. Amy, what should employers keep in mind for that issue?
Thanks, John. So as unfortunately all of us listening today know, businesses have been severely impacted by COVID-19 and the various restrictions on business operations around the country. Unfortunately, in some cases, you know, this has resulted in layoffs and furloughs. And these may be employees that were very valuable employees and have significant confidential information, goodwill, those other interests that are always important interests to an employer, but the business circumstances necessitated the layoff. As many listeners likely know, the law related to restrictive covenants is incredibly state-specific. and this issue is no different, certain states have restricted by statute whether an employer can enforce a restrictive covenant against a laid off employee. Washington, Massachusetts, Nevada are some, to name a few. And several of these states require an employer to pay the employee during the period of restriction if they're going to try to enforce a non-compete. In other states, the common law restricts the ability for an employer to enforce an agreement against a laid off employee, or may look at the reason for the termination, whether it's for cause versus no cause. So those are obviously significant considerations for an employer when they're looking to enforce a restrictive covenant down the line, and they'll have to look closely at their various state restrictions to see if it's even a possibility. So for states in which potentially you can, or the issue is undecided, and an employer wants to enforce a restrictive covenant against a former employee, the first thing the court is going to look at if you're facing an injunction hearing is balancing the equities. So John, can you talk a little bit about what you expect to see in that analysis during this COVID-19 pandemic?
Sure, Amy, thanks. When courts consider a request for a preliminary injunction or a temporary restraining order, they have to balance the equities and consider the harm to the employer seeking the injunction and also the employee against whom the injunction may be issued. In the current circumstances, courts may be more persuaded by arguments that the harm to the employee outweighs the harm to the employer in light of the state of the economy and the extremely high unemployment rate as of just a few months ago. Up until the COVID outbreak, we had record unemployment. It was widely recognized that it was easy for many to find a job. So the typical argument in a non-compete case from the employer would be that the employee, even if the employee is enjoined from working under the non-compete, that employee can go find a job in a different sector, one that doesn't violate the non-compete, given how in-demand employees and workers were. That's no longer the case. It's certain we have record high unemployment now. And so the employee can make a persuasive argument to the court that the job that he has found that his former employee is trying to enjoin is one of the few jobs available. And so forcing him not to work will result in much greater harm, certainly compared to normal circumstances. Employers may face an uphill battle about harm to themselves as well. The non-competition provisions of a restrictive covenant may not get as much traction as a judge as arguments about non-solicitation of customers on the part of a former employee. Of course, non-solicitation of customers has a much more direct and easy to understand impact on an employer's bottom line and its profits. If the employer can articulate that the breach of a restrictive covenant is resulting in the loss of customers or employees due to someone's breach of non-solicitation, that is much more likely to get traction with a judge than mere arguments about competition in light of the current circumstances. Another issue that comes up in the balance of equities is the public interest factor. Normally, this is an overlooked factor that doesn't get a lot of attention from the courts. But in the current crisis, especially in the healthcare industry, any employee would have a much greater argument than normal that keeping them from working during a healthcare crisis would affect the public interest, and therefore an injunction should not issue. So once again, the public interest factor may play more of a role in light of the unusual circumstances that we're in. Now, as companies deal with the current emergency that all of us are in, they have to think about what they do now will affect how things work for their contracts and their legal arguments down the road. Amy, do you want to talk about some of those issues?
Yes, that's right, John. We are seeing employers look at what changes they might make to terms and conditions of employment that might allow them to perhaps keep more employees on, keep more employees working. And that may involve changes to compensation, to bonuses, to working hours. to things that employees may have expected to be one way in the past and may need to be altered going forward to ensure, you know, the viability of the business and to keep as many employees on as possible. So employers may want to keep in mind in making those changes whether there are any contractual provisions that may be implicated. There is a doctrine in contract law, the first material breach, and that's a basic tenet of contract law that you may not claim the benefits of a contract after having been the first to breach it. Now, this is going to have limited applicability in the case of at-will employees generally, although there could be significant circumstances that a court may say that there was an implied contract or something of that nature with an at-will employee. So always something to keep in mind with all employees. But in the case of a situation where there's not mutual consent to a change of the terms and conditions of employment, there may be an argument in some circumstances that there was breach of some sort of employment contract. And in the case of restrictive covenant agreements, if there is a contractual employment agreement, perhaps that contains a restrictive covenant provision, there could be an argument that a change to those terms of that contract could be a material breach that would allow the employee to later argue that the restrictive covenants contained in that agreement are no longer enforceable. This issue is going to be incredibly fact-specific because what is a material breach under one contract is not going to be necessarily the same under another contract. But it's certainly worth considering whether changes to compensation, whether an employer is abiding by the termination provisions, things of that nature, whether those might be implicating restrictive covenant agreements that are also in place. Many contracts will also have a provision perhaps allowing for independent enforceability of the restrictive covenants, notwithstanding a breach of any other provision. And a court's review of those types of provision will be dependent on the state law. So this is another area that is really going to vary by state, but something for employers to consider as they're looking at making changes going forward. So, John, we've heard that in this, you know, unusual circumstances, there's probably decisions by some employers not to enforce an agreement for reasons related to the pandemic or business circumstances. What may employers want to think about in those types of circumstances?
Right. So employers will certainly face a tough decision about whether and how to enforce a restrictive covenant because of business concerns. They may not have the money to pursue it. There may be publicity issues, fear of negative publicity, or just the difficulties of actually getting a case into court. And when those come up, the employers also have to weigh what are some of the issues and arguments that will be used against them in the future if they do not pursue restrictive covenants or violations of restrictive covenants? The main one is the selective enforcement argument, and that can take a couple different forms. One argument would be that if a company does not enforce its restrictive covenants at a certain time, it's essentially conceding that the protectable business interests, which of course is a required element of a restrictive covenant, the ability and need to identify those protectable business interests is always a factor in enforcing restrictive covenants. So if you don't enforce it, are you conceding or waiving that those interests are not in play or are less important or less protectable than in the past? That's one argument. The flip side of that is that the necessity or the level of restrictions, whether those restrictions are time, geography, or activity, whether those are truly necessary if you have not sought to enforce those restrictions in the past. If you had a 2-year restriction that you didn't try to enforce before, then it may be harder to enforce a 2-year restriction in the future. And finally, some employees may argue, make an equitable estoppel argument that they were led to believe the agreement would not be enforced or was not binding on them based on a company not enforcing the agreement against other employees in the past. So those are some of the challenges or arguments employers will face. Of course, one comeback argument is just merely to point to the unusual circumstances. Again, that's an equitable argument, but courts do take that into account as they consider injunctive relief in the context of restrictive covenants. And employers can make a good case that the circumstances of the COVID outbreak led them to make the business decision not to pursue a restrictive covenant in one particular circumstance. Of course, another tactic would be to use limited and confidential releases with employees. So that way there is a resolution that's documented and, if necessary, a provision to allow that release to be used in the future to show that, in fact, the company did enforce to some extent its restrictive covenant and did get an agreement. For example, it may allow someone to compete, but it still protected confidential information or kept in place non-solicitation provisions. So again, those are some of the arguments that may come up and some of the rejoinders and tactics employers can use against the selective enforcement argument made during the COVID outbreak. Now, as we come out of this outbreak and start to come back to work in many states, there are a lot of issues and challenges to keep in mind. Amy, do you want to talk about those?
Yes. So as employees have been out, potentially either out working remotely or potentially on a temporary furlough, employers may want to consider their moonlighting policies and how those apply to their restrictive covenant agreements. Many employers do have policies or agreements limiting employees' ability to engage in other employment, especially with a competitor. And this may be a particular issue of note when employees are working from home and maybe not working their regular hours or on a temporary furlough. So it's worth considering what agreements are in place and whether those restrictions have been followed by employees who are either out or will be returning to the workplace, always to ensure that the employer's confidential information, customer relationships, goodwill, and other business interests have been appropriately protected and will be protected going forward. So the other issue to consider if you're in a situation where employees have been working remotely and maybe returning to the office or are going to continue working remotely for some extended period is whether they've been given some extended sort of access to the company's systems, you know, to enable remote work, and really taking a closer look at whether those are still warranted, whether those have been appropriately used, and evaluating any need for further protections, either from a system basis or through new agreements or restrictions on employees as they return to the office or embark on further work from home. Just this opportunity to kind of revisit necessary protections for your confidential information and trade secrets. It's always something good to be thinking about as you're thinking through the other various return to work issues that are definitely coming across your desks, I'm sure. So we hope you found this podcast today informative. Thank you for joining us for Ogletree Deacons podcast, and we hope you can join us for another one soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended or to be construed as legal advice.